Welcome to the VitaRabbit WebXR podcast, where we talk about AR and VR on the web. My name is Jonathan. I co-founded VitaRabbit and founded Wonderland Engine.
My name is Florian, and I am the co-founder of VitaRabbit and a WebXR developer at Construct Arcade.
Hello and welcome to the VitaRabbit podcast. Today we're joined by Ada Rose Cannon, a developer advocate at Samsung Internet and just generally a very public figure in the WebXR space. We've seen a lot of great blog posts and great projects coming from her. Just recently, some experiments with hand gestures. So we're really excited to have you here, Ada.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always happy to talk about WebXR. It makes me really excited.
Awesome. So let's, as a first question, get into what does a developer advocate do at Samsung Internet?
So my role as a developer advocate is really to be like the go-between between the developer community and Samsung as a web browser. And not only am I like showing developers what the latest features in web browsers are and how to use them, but I'm also taking feedback from developers and the developer community to feed back into the team that makes the Samsung Internet web browser in order to inform the decisions we make for future releases, what features we should prioritize supporting, and things like that.
Cool. That sounds a bit like the link between the development team of the browser or the product team of the browser and the community.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Cool. Very awesome. So how and when did you get into the WebXR space or web VR space?
So I got into like web VR at my before I came to Samsung. When the Google Cardboard was released, I thought this was the most exciting device ever because it brought VR to the world. You didn't need a super fancy handset to go in it. The Cardboard itself could be built cheaply and you could buy it for only a few dollars, which at the time that was my budget. I couldn't afford getting the Oculus DK1 or the DK2 or anything like that. And yeah, I was started dabbling around with hacking together VR demos for the Cardboard, which was really fun. And then I got involved in the web VR community group that came up a bit later, which was all about getting something working in the early Oculus headset. Going from the browser to the headset and just showing something. So that worked WebGL and really became the basis of what became WebXR today. So yeah, when I joined Samsung asked me to join the developer advocacy team because at the time, Samsung had the Gear VR, which was supporting web VR on the device. And they really wanted someone to help promote that to developers. And this was like my perfect cup of tea because I've always wanted to support the web and support browsers. And this was like a really great opportunity to work with a web browser. And I also got to promote and still work with web VR, except get paid to do it. And so that was really wonderful. And then when web VR pivoted to become WebXR to gain like the future support of new devices, they asked me if I could co-chair the group. And that was when I really got involved in running the WebXR working group and community group in the W3C. And it's where I still am today. And I've been doing that for a few years now. And everything's ticking along, the specs are shipping, so seems like things are going okay.
Really cool. Talking about the WebXR spec, like what WebXR features, upcoming features, are you most excited about?
Oh, there's so many. So a lot of the work in WebXR is like done in parallel these days. So there's lots of different people working on lots of different things all at the same time. The lighting estimation stuff, which is like behind a flag in Chrome at the moment, is really exciting because gives you like really good augmented reality by estimating what the lighting is in the scene around you. And you can start emulating shading effects and stuff like that. It doesn't make so much sense in a headset, but for like a handset device, like in a headset, it makes a bit of a difference. Because of the way head-mounted augmented reality displays work, you can't really overlay shadows on the environment. Yep. You can only go lighter than the background. You can't go darker. But for stuff like handheld augmented reality, which has a screen, you can even do stuff like having the 3D models correctly casting a shadow from the light sources in the scene. So I think that is super cool and just really amazing. It makes me very excited. The other features I'm really looking forward to, which are like ones that are more down the line, which are some of the ones that Oculus are working on at the moment. Mm-hmm. So Oculus are working on looking at doing navigation. So you can go from one web page to another. And this has been something which developers have been asking for from WebXR for a long time. Because after all, like, the WebXR has had the ability to go from page to page since day one. Like, it's the core feature of the web. And it's something that WebXR really struggles with due to it being a huge security risk. Mm-hmm. So currently, the implementation Oculus is working on is focused on staying within the same domain. Mm-hmm. So you could go from example.com/WebXR site 1 .html to example.com/WebXR site 2 .html, which should be like a good step forward. Like, it'll help a lot of people, but it's not going to be the thing that unites all of the WebXR sites under the umbrella. But that's something which I hope can happen soon, but it's a huge security nightmare to actually work out how to do it properly.
Yep.
So that's something which is still very early days, but it's something I am extremely excited for because I think it's going to be really important for WebXR and just XR on the web as a whole.
Definitely.
I completely agree on that. We're definitely one of the first people to implement that on a large scale on our website, I think, on Construct Arcade. Just to go between games and not be able to take off the headset is pretty important to our users. And
yeah, that's exactly the kind of use case, which is why we felt it was really important just to get something working for some sites, especially sites like yours where you have lots of different games on different sites. Mm-hmm. Because it's really awkward if you start having to have the ability to like hot load in new XR content. It's just a really difficult thing to do. So being able to go from page to page, keep the content nice and isolated, it's just a great way to work.
Definitely. We'd been thinking about doing this with iframes and then having the website be an just displaying all the games as an iframe and not switching pages and things. But I think like it's still way better to have the navigation API just natively work with the headset and us just using that to transition instead.
So, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yes, it's a lot better.
Cool. Talking about the light estimation, have you done experiments with that?
I haven't personally. One of my peers on the immersive web groups, Brandon Jones from Google, who's been like the editor since the start of WebVR. Yeah,
we had him on the podcast, actually.
Oh, wonderful. Every time he starts working on a new feature, he tends to build these features into his demos. Yeah. He has a really amazing demo called XR Dinosaurs, and which I'm sure you can find by searching for it on a popular search engine. And if you do that in augmented reality, on Chrome, on a handset, with this feature turned on in the flags, you'll be able to see the lighting estimation in real life.
Oh, real cool. I'll try that. We'll also put a link to it in the description.
Wonderful, yeah, that's a great idea.
Nice. But you have done some experiments with PandyJS, which we talked about with the maintainer on the WebXR all-in-one workflow panel, which you moderated. Thank you, by the way. That was really fun.
Now, that panel has actually got me inspired to take a look at PandyJS and give it a go.
Yeah, so what have you been doing there?
So I literally just started working with PandyJS yesterday. Mm-hmm. I got it integrated into my project and I just managed to get the demo working where you can throw up peace signs and it'll recognize that you're doing peace signs. But I'm at a good stage where I can now start doing different hand gestures for different things.
Amazing.
So the tricky part was, so initially I had the demo just being able to show you the hands because 3JS will take the hand model from, so there's a repo the Immersive Web Groups maintains called WebXR input profiles, which basically contains all of the configuration and 3D models for every WebXR capable controller, all of which are very thankfully provided by the hardware manufacturers for the repo. So for example, we have the Oculus Quest controllers provided by Oculus. We have some of the Microsoft headset controllers provided by Microsoft and similar ones for Samsung for the Samsung Odyssey headset. But what's really nice is that we also now have 3D models for hand tracking. So you have a nice mesh, which is provided by Oculus. So it's the same Oculus, it's the same mesh as the one you'd have in the Oculus headset, which is really nice. So actually you have a really nice, like, continuous 3D model there for the hand tracking.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I've got this model working. And the nice thing about the way it's developed is that I didn't actually have to do any additional work to support moving around in my scene between using a controller and using the hands, because I was using the standard WebXR input source to detect stuff like select events. And so if you do a select, it fires out a ray and you use that to navigate around the scene. But then when I wanted to do more complex gestures, it became a bit trickier, because often when I was like partway through doing the peace sign gesture, and then I was coming out of that, it would think I was doing a select event and then teleport me somewhere. So that was like a little tricky, and that was the trickiness I was dealing with. So what I had to do, I had to look at the input event I was getting before I was doing the teleportation, and basically see, oh yes, this WebXR input source, it has a hand object, which means it has hand tracking capabilities, which means it's a user's hand. Mm-hmm. And because it has hand tracking capabilities, we won't handle it here. We'll just return early and not do anything. And then I do the hand tracking with HandyJS a bit later. And then when HandyJS senses finger guns, I'm going to have that doing the locomotion. So if you do a finger gun, you can point somewhere and be like, I want to go there. And then you'll teleport there. And then if you're going to be able to do grabbing motions to grab stuff. And another feature it's got that's really cool is that it has American Sign Language recognition.
Cool.
For at least for most of the letters. There's a few letters which don't work so well because they involve like fingers overlapping other fingers.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's difficult.
And the headset right now struggles recognizing those kind of things. So some of the letters, it's a little bit harder to do. And the other thing I wanted to look at was doing like British Sign Language recognition, because I'm not sure if you can tell by my accent, but I'm British and I've studied British Sign Language before. So I thought it'd be really nice to contribute British Sign Language characters recognition.
Oh, cool.
Unfortunately, almost all the individual character signs in British Sign Language actually involve two hands overlapping. And that's something that's basically difficult. Totally impossible. So it's not only difficult to track, that's just not trackable, which is a shame. So I'm going to stick with American Sign Language for this. And so you're going to be able to do stuff like I'm going to have a hand signal, probably an open palm, face up, will be, I want to summon an object. And then you use the same hand to fingerspell the object. So you could do like C-A-T, summon a cat, do palm up again, and then it will summon the cat into the palm of your hand, is what I'm thinking. So I think there should be like a pretty fun use case, a good demonstration of the hand tracking API and some of the stuff you can do. So that's like really what I'm working on at the moment, which I'm lucky enough that my team is letting me build stuff like this, because Samsung Internet is a handset based web browser. Obviously it doesn't do hand tracking because it's built into a phone. So it's not actually something we can demonstrate as a web browser, but thankfully, they're kind enough just to let me play with stuff like this during work hours, which is quite nice.
Yes.
So hopefully I should have a cool demo out soon so that people can play with hand tracking and see how I've done it and have a go at doing it themselves.
Awesome. Really cool. That sounds really fun. And it brings me to the next question of how Samsung Internet is interested in supporting WebXR. You mentioned the mobile devices, but...
Yeah, so right now... So Samsung got into supporting web VR because we had the Gear VR, which is unfortunately now deprecated as a piece of hardware, which is a shame because I thought it was really cool. So currently, Samsung only supports WebXR through the mobile handsets. Unfortunately, every Samsung Galaxy device is already a WebXR-capable device out the box.
Cool.
So if you have Samsung Internet on your smartphone, which works on any Android device, and your Android device also supports AR Core, which actually most of them do these days, it's impressive, then you should be able to use WebXR through Samsung Internet, which is where Samsung's goals for supporting WebXR is. And we even just landed a new feature the other day. So in the Samsung Internet beta, we now support the DOM overlay API.
Ooh,
that lets you,
very cool.
Which lets you overlay HTML content as if it was placed full screen on top of your augmented reality scene.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
So this lets you combine some HTML content, so you could have some buttons or a header or some text information on top of your augmented reality scene underneath. So this is a really good way to show the information in a way that's more natural to web developers, like rendering text to a texture and then displaying it to the user. Like, it's doable, but it's messy. It's not a great user experience. So actually being able to use HTML and CSS to display text content in a way that works well, it's accessible, it works with the device's accessibility like layer, and yeah, just works out the box. So yeah, that's really important, and I'm really glad we started shipping it in the Samsung Internet Beta.
Cool.
It sounds amazing. Yeah. Looking forward to testing it out.
Yeah, we recently spoke to Roland Dubois about accessibility, raised awareness on that.
Yeah, accessibility is definitely one of our, like, if I'm being honest, one of our weaker points in the WebXR device API, because the API itself is just built on WebGL. And if you build something WebGL, it means you have to build everything yourself. Yep. And that includes all the accessibility stuff. And people often forget to include things like captions and audio descriptions and audio overlays. So yeah, it's a difficult thing. So by leveraging what's already existing in by leveraging the accessibility features that are already available in the web platform, we can start to make things more accessible. So right now, this is only for one kind of like domain, like handheld augmented reality, but it's a really good start for a really important thing to do.
That's generally very difficult to get in interactive content, the amount of accessibility you can have in the standard web. So we have also tried doing things that are not as easy, especially with input. And it's just, yeah, the first step going in the direction.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that you're thinking about it as a developer. That's really important.
So going into things that are not quite there yet, what do you think needs to improve for the development community, just generally to improve WebXR in general, but also to improve the developer experience maybe?
So I think the one thing that WebXR does really well is that we have a really good selection of very developer-friendly libraries. So if you want to do stuff with HTML and have a lot of stuff done for you, we have A-Frame. If you want to really get stuck into the JavaScript, we have 3.js and Babylon.js and Play Canvas. And we have some really wonderful all-in-one solutions. So like Play Canvas is all-in-one. There's a Wonderland engine.
Yes.
So like for the developers here, there's like a huge array of options. But the one thing that's really lacking is the ability to easily create content, like 3D models, like animated rigs, avatars. So for avatars, there's like readyplayer.me, which if you can integrate with that, is like a really good way to give your users a nice avatar. And for like 3D models, there used to be the Google Poly API. That's now been deprecated, that let you pull in 3D models from Google Poly that had been built with like Tilt Brush and been built with Google Blocks. Mm-hmm.
There's Sketchfab also. We spoke to Alban Denoyl, CEO of Sketchfab, on this podcast. And yeah, I guess you could even use the Sketchfab API maybe for the sign language project that you're planning.
Across a project that kind of does what Poly did, that is Ecosia Gallery.
Yeah, that's another really good one. So the Sketchfab, Ecosia, there's a new one. Yeah. Like PMND. Anyway, this is really cool. It's like web-ready, low-poly 3D assets. Because that was always the hard thing with finding stuff for Sketchfab, is that a lot of the stuff is really high-poly, so you can drop like one model into your scene, and that would be like the center point of your scene, and that's like almost blowing your frame budget. And so it's really important to have these really low-poly, web-ready, quick-to-download, quick-to-use assets. And so that's what I want to use for this particular demo. But this still presumes that you have some kind of huge ecosystem of people out there creating these web-ready 3D models for you to use. And yeah, it is out there. But right now, if you wanted a bespoke 3D model and you aren't a professional 3D modeler yourself, your only options are to go out there and to pay someone to make you a model. And that's very good. You should definitely go out and pay people to create 3D assets. As a cottage industry, I would, especially for the web, that I would love to see like really take off there at a like a more individual consumer level rather than as a big industry level. But what I'd really like to see is the ability to open up a website or through WebXR, through some kind of headset for VR headset or headset AR headset, and be able to do 3D modeling in virtual reality, like Google Blocks used to be able to do, be able to quickly assemble and paint a 3D model and have it exported in a very web-friendly way where it's very nicely optimized, textures are nicely in basis, so they're like very small. The 3D model has nice geometry and is out there. But this is like a really difficult thing to build. Yeah, but I think if someone could build it, it's the kind of thing that would allow someone who's making something for VR use the tools they already have to build something in a very user-friendly way and then just drop it into their scene. So if someone's like, oh, I need a flower pot, which has a little house on it, they could just build a 3D model of a flower pot house, download the GLTF, and then immediately start using it in their project and drop it in and start building stuff. And I think this is the kind of thing that will really revolutionize WebXR. But it's a big project, a big ask. And I guess it's the kind of thing where if it never gets built, eventually I might get around to it. But it's just like, it's such a huge task that I don't think it'd be something that a single person could just build on their own.
It's not just modeling. I think it's also about texturing, about doing all the materials. And there's huge community like working on getting those features into 3JS and other frameworks. And I think we're going to see a lot of innovation, hopefully, coming soon.
Like, I think the GLTF standard has done a really good job here of predefining like particular materials and the way they work. So I think if you can work within the GLTF standard and then export that information, like export it as a GLB file, I think that's a great way to have a single asset that should be compatible with any 3D rendering system in the web. So no matter what framework you're using, it should just work in those frameworks.
Awesome. Speaking of standards, we can go back and touch a bit again on the Immersive Web Working Group and the Immersive Web Community Group. Maybe you want to quickly outline what the difference is and how they work together.
Okay, yes. The Immersive Web Groups are the groups in the W3C that work on the web standards. The W3C is like the standards body that standardizes a lot of the specifications used in the web. Not all of them. There's like other groups that work on web standards, but the W3C is usually the one people think of first. And so within the W3C, there are two kinds of groups. There's community groups and working groups. So community groups are accessible by anyone, and they can be made by anyone, and they're usually spun up to solve a particular task, but they can't actually make web standards. So they can talk about them, they can come up with ideas, but within the W3C workflow, they can't do the rubber stamping necessary to ship a standard. Working groups, on the other hand, they aren't open to everyone. You have to be an employee of an organization that's a member of the W3C. And there are things like 400 companies that are members of the W3C. And so if you work for a large organization, there's a good chance that your organization is already a W3C member and you can just take part in the working group. But it's not free for an organization to join the W3C. Like, it costs money depending on your size and stuff like that. And so for a lot of people, joining the W3C to participate isn't really an option. So if you're a particular expert in a particular domain, such as XR on the web, you can join as an invited expert working group. But outside of that, it's not really an option. So the way we get around this in the immersive web groups is that we have both a community group and a working group. And Aishagul, Chris, and I are the chairs of both groups. And anyone can join the community group. And the community group is where the majority of the work gets done. So standards go from just being an idea to being 95% done in the community group. And then once they're at the stage where like browsers have started testing them out, they're maybe shipping them behind a flag, developers are using them, and it seems like this is actually a stable thing that looks like it's going to ship, it will move into the working group to be finished off. It will go through, have all the appropriate peer reviews, it will be checked to make sure it's like secure and accessible and is put together at the kind of standard the web expects. And so this might result in a few minor changes to the library, maybe the API shape will change a little bit, but generally the way it works will remain the same. So developers might have to change their code a bit, but they won't have to totally rewrite it. So this happened recently with hand tracking. When hand tracking went to the working group, it had some feedback which resulted in changes to the API that meant developers had to update some of their code a bit before it shipped properly. But yeah, that tends to be how it works. And then once the standard's good to go and we've had everyone signed off on it, it then enters the stage known as CR, which means kind of a recommendation. That's really when it's like pretty firmly set in stone and really not going to change. And so actually at this point, none of the WebXR specs have reached candidate recommendation yet, but we're really hoping that some of the core specs should be able to reach candidate recommendation soon. That's a really high priority task for the working group right now. And it's something which we really want to get done, because if a working group isn't shipping specs, it's not doing its job. And so we need to get some specs shipped. So yeah, that's what we're working on. If anyone is interested in the standards process, just check to see if your company's a member of the working group. And if they are, just feel free to place an application and join. And if you're not, feel free to join the community group. It's accessible to everyone. And if you're not sure how to participate, but you really want to, just drop me a message either via email or social media, and I will try and help you.
Links will be in the description. Will be in the description of the... Yeah.
Probably an easy way to get into the WebXR spec development is also just to open issues in the repositories and or join the conversation there.
Thanks for bringing that up, actually. So all of the work of the immersive web groups, both of them, are done openly on the web in github.com/immersive-web. So you can see the agendas of the meetings. You can see the specs as they're being written. You can see the issues. You can see the pull requests. And you can take part in... These aren't closed groups. Anyone's welcome to participate. So yeah, please get involved. And if not, just feel free to just dig through the repos. Take a look at the closed issues or some of the past agendas or the minutes of the meetings. It's all up there.
Very great overview over how the immersive web working groups are organized. That's really nice. Doing a bit of a detour here. Going back from the spec, what are the... You mentioned before the XR dinosaurs, but what are some other experiences you like saw and you're excited about and maybe want to like promote, even if your own? Feel free to promote your own experiences always.
So one of the ones that's actually got me really excited was called Anthropometron by Dr. Keith Chan. And what's really excites me about it is that Dr. Keith Chan wasn't a WebXR developer or a graphics developer when he started building it. Like, he had some really important information to share, and so built a museum around it in virtual reality with really good content, and it's just amazing to see. And that really inspires me that... It shows that WebXR isn't just for the expert graphics developers or the expert web developers or the people who are experts in both. If you have something important to share, WebXR is accessible enough that you can build something to share it. And I think that's just amazing to see.
I actually haven't tried the experience yet, to be honest. So I'm looking forward to do that.
What I'm thinking was WebGPU has been being talked about a lot. So screens on WebGPU and... How do you think it's going to affect WebXR once it becomes a standard?
WebGPU is pretty amazing. It gives you much lower level access to the GPU than we ever had before. For example, you can start being able to do compute on the GPU, which previously if you had to do it before, you had to do like weird hacks involving textures in WebGL. It was a real bit of a mess. By giving you much lower level access, you can get a lot higher performance out of your graphics than you could have done before. And WebGPU is going to be WebXR capable. By building your thing with WebGPU, or probably more likely building it in some all-in-one solution that ships WebGPU, you will end up with just being able to put a lot more in your scene than you could have before. You'll be able to fit much more into your frame budget. Also, you'll be able to do some effects that were really difficult to do before. You were to do some really advanced things. Like, it's probably not as low level as people who are pure graphics developers would like or would expect, but it is extremely low level for the web. And so there's going to be some really amazing things that come out of WebGPU. Like, I don't want to say it's going to be the thing that's going to make WebXR take off, because WebXR is already doing pretty well relying on WebGL and WebGL2. But it's definitely going to be the thing that's going to enable a lot more high fidelity experiences in WebXR, when people do want to do that. Because you don't necessarily need high fidelity to make something engaging. It's all about the content at the end of the day. If you have good content, you don't need something that's super high fidelity for it to be engaging. But it doesn't hurt. And yeah, this is going to really enable some really interesting things in WebXR. And I, for one, am looking incredibly forward to it.
You mentioned it's not going to be the thing that makes WebXR take off, but we haven't seen it like taken off completely yet. It's getting there, but what do you think needs to happen?
It's all about content. If developers build interesting stuff for WebXR, people will want to use WebXR. So I think the things that are going to help, having easy access to be creative in WebXR. So if someone can throw something together, make a expression of their personality, and quickly show it to their friends. That's the kind of thing that's really important. And ideally, I'd like to say that they can do that today using libraries like A-Frame. But I think a lot of people get intimidated by things like that. So I think it would probably end up being some kind of all-in-one solution that hosts itself. So you would enter a VR creator or an AR creator, you would make something and then there'd be a share button which would let you share it over social media, and then people can experience it on whatever XR hardware they're doing. So they could view it on a 2D monitor, they could view it in augmented reality through their phone, they could view it AR in a headset or VR in a headset. I think that kind of thing would really help it take off, because it would just encourage people just to have some fun with something and share it around, and like the kind of thing that people do with TikToks and Vine and all the various things that let people be creative and express themselves online. The other thing I think is going to be really important is over time, XR hardware is going to become more ubiquitous. The Oculus Quest 2 has been an incredible success. It's had, like, when the Oculus Quest 2 was released, that brought a lot more people to WebXR. And I think we're going to see this and again with each new hardware release. And right now, the hardware ecosystem is almost entirely dominated with Facebook and the Oculus Quest. Because the Oculus Quest is an amazing piece of hardware at a pretty accessible price that enables people to get stuck in really quickly with a really low barrier to entry. And right now, that only really makes sense for virtual reality, because it came a lot sooner than augmented reality, and so the hardware has had time to get there. But eventually, I'm sure we're going to see augmented reality doing the same thing. I have no idea what company is going to make like the first like consumer-ready AR headset. And by consumer-ready, I don't mean like less than a few $100s. Because there was like the Magic Leap, which was more targeted at consumers, but at several $1,000s, in my opinion, that's not consumer-focused. That's like a lot of consumers aren't willing to put in that kind of money on something they haven't experienced before. Yeah. So I think once cheap augmented reality headsets become available in a way that makes people interested as well. So like the thing which I'm actually half expecting is like Apple to suddenly come out with an AR headset out of the blue, and suddenly the Apple AR headsets will do to the XR ecosystem like Apple smartphones to the smartphone ecosystem back in 2007. But the main difference between then and now, at least as far as I'm concerned, is back then the web wasn't prepared to be mobile ready. But now the web is prepared to be XR ready. Like, this is I think probably the first time the web has reached a technology before the technology itself has...
You made it happen.
Well, it's definitely been a huge team effort here. The amount of work put in by a huge number of people involved in the immersive web groups is amazing. Like, it's one of the largest groups in the W3C. There's so many people involved trying to make this take off. So when it does take off, the web is going to be there with content that's already ready to go on these headsets. And that's amazing. So as long as they support WebXR, it's going to be really good. So yeah, in summary, like, I think it's going to be consumer-ready AR headsets in a way that consumers want to use them. So they integrate smoothly into people's lives and are affordable. And also, like, content that lets people be creative using the hardware they already own. And you have those two things together, and you're going to have people, like, it's just going to be the teenagers that make any, like, all hardware, it's going to be the teenagers that make it happen. If once you've got a bunch of teenagers having AR headsets and they want to use them and they think they're fun to use, they're going to be making content and sharing it amongst themselves, and that's going to bring in other people. The moment the kids find something cool, it brings in the advertisers and the money, and then other people get involved and people start writing books on how to build content, and it all grows out of that with so much technology. Have you heard of the game Roblox?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of adults I know, or at least aren't super aware of Roblox as a thing, but Roblox is a game aimed at children for creating 3D worlds and playing in them. But the market cap on Roblox is huge. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a huge amount of money flowing there. And I've heard a lot of the stuff there isn't, like, the best, like, most ethical market, but it just shows that if you democratize the ability to create the content, then markets will grow around that. And yeah, I think that's really cool. And I don't want to see WebXR take off on the backs of capitalism, but yeah, it does help.
Yeah, monetization has been definitely a struggle in WebXR for a while now, and there's some people working on it, but what are your opinions on that?
So there are two things I think can work quite well. There's things like the micropayment systems. So I think if there was a XR-capable browser that supported, like, the Coil extensions, you could probably monetize that. But the thing I'd like to see is WebXR browsers supporting the web payment API through WebXR. If you were to do a input event into WebXR, it would blur your scene and show you the prompts so that you can be like, ah, this website wants to make a payment. Do you agree? And then...
Yep.
Yes, I want them to take a payment to pay for this thing. And I think that would work really well, because then the things that are difficult in XR is inputting details like credit card details and stuff like that, like entering a long string of numbers when your only way of entering information is using essentially a laser pointer at a keyboard that's like a meter away. Pain in the ass to do. So once you've already got payment information into the operating system, you'd be able to leverage that with the web payment API to make payments on WebXR sites. So you could go to a WebXR arcade and be like, I want to buy access to this game. Or knowing the micropayment model of today, it would be, I want to buy 600 gems. And then you would get your tokens and use them to play the games or whatever person's monetary systems works. But yeah, I think web payments, mm-hmm. at the core, the web payment API in VR or AR is what would make monetization of XR content a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And I think as long as companies... So this is a thing that I don't think it's being blocked by the WebXR spec. Like, I think this is an implementation thing, and it'll be a tricky thing to implement, but I think it's doable. And I think if enough people push the implementers of web browsers to say, I want to be able to take payments in WebXR, eventually they'll be like, okay, we'll come up with a way for you to make payments in WebXR, especially if you're a partner with the particular browser or hardware manufacturer. Unfortunately, there is a little bit of a conflict of interest here. So a lot of the hardware manufacturers have a store they would rather people buy content through. A lot of people are happy to see people buy stuff through their shop, but they want the web content to be free. And so that if people start trying to buy stuff through the web to access VR content or AR content, that's a share of the profits that they won't be able to see because they can't take a cut of it.
I see.
Because if you're buying through a app store, the app store will take a sizable chunk of your money. And if you're buying stuff through the web, they can't do that. So I can't imagine they have a large incentive to implement web payments. And I'm not just talking about the Oculus store here. I can imagine the same is going to happen. So if and when Apple release some kind of XR headset, whether it's VR or AR or whatever they do, there's going to be the same conflict of interest. So who knows? But maybe I'm being too cynical and maybe they will see like, hey, like having access to a world of XR content is more important to us than enforcing developers to ship through our app store.
Maybe they will just take a cut through the web payments API. Just 15-20% from whenever someone uses web payments via the Oculus browser or something. Maybe that's going to be the thing.
The web payment API, it's a method of securely giving people the card details. Unless they were running a virtual credit card, which, I mean, is an option. That would be the way they'd have to do that. And then it would basically, you'd basically say, I want to pay with my App Store credit. Yeah. And then it would take a cut from the App Store credit. And it would probably tell the website, I want to take a cut. Do you want to add it on or just take less money? Mm-hmm. And they would have to decide.
There is Google Pay, and Apple has a payment system too. It could work like via those. I don't know. Not really familiar with the specifics of those.
That's true. Platforms. And both of those do work through the web payment API.
Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, it's an interesting problem that I think would help. I think a lot of companies don't see as much value as shipping XR content to the web because it's slightly harder to monetize.
Harder to make.
And lower fidelity usually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's harder to make because you have to like support like any random ass hardware that people could invent over the next 10 years, which is like, it's one thing supporting hardware you have access to, but building something that's also probably going to work down the line on hardware you don't even know if and when or what it will be is another thing entirely. And that's, like, it's a hard problem, but I think it's one that's worth solving because it means you can build something and you can ship it. And then when new hardware comes along, you don't have to ship it to the new app stores or the new whatever. Mm-hmm. It's already out there. And you do have the benefits of the engagement from the users as well, because users can just, rather than having to go to an app store, find the app they want to download without getting distracted and downloading anything else, and then buying it and installing it, and then going back to their home screen to find it without clicking on Beat Saber because they would rather play on that instead because it's just right there and their app is taking a couple minutes to download, and then get distracted and then just take off the headset and be done and then come back 2 weeks later and be like, oh yeah, I bought that thing.
I think PWAs could be a very interesting solution to that eventually, and I think you've wrote quite a few blog posts to PWAs. And I think Oculus also announced that they would have PWAs eventually, right?
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah, they had it at
the last developer conference. Like, it's quite a while ago, but since then we haven't seen it quite yet.
That would be amazing. PWAs on Oculus Quest would be incredible, because then you could just go, if there is a thing that you like and want to keep coming back to, you can just install that website as a PWA. It'll be on your Oculus home screen. You'd just be able to open up whenever you want, and it will just that would be amazing.
Yeah,
that would make me very happy.
Same here.
Yeah, because right now the web has the advantage that you can just go there, you can play, and then you can leave. But it doesn't help with the whole returning again and again and again. Like with a native app or with an app in the library, if you had PWAs, you'll see it and be like, oh, I want to play that and keep coming back. And that way, I think, would really help a lot of the sites that want replayability, like especially like your arcade. Like, you're probably going to be continually adding new games and content, and you want people to keep coming back and checking it or playing their old favorites and stuff like that.
Also, notifying them is a huge thing too. I mean, just telling people, okay, you have a new game, or we have a content update, we have new features on the platform. Or even like with navigation.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure if the Oculus browser does support the web, the push notification API, or if any of or if any of the headset browsers do at this point. But if you're doing handheld AR, it's fine because that already has push notifications and that works well. It's just like headsets. Because people, at least not yet, aren't wearing the headsets all the time. Like, I think once AR becomes no more awkward to use than like a chunky pair of glasses, that's when we're probably gonna start seeing people be in AR all the time and have their notifications in their glasses. But it's like, what do push notifications mean if you're only using a headset once a week or once every 2 weeks? Do you boot it up and then you suddenly have a bunch of badges on one app saying you have 15 notifications from this app which has been trying to get you to play it whilst the headset's been unused in your drawer? Yeah, that's interesting. So yeah. So these are interesting because these are all the progressive web app features. So push notifications, getting a icon in the user's app system, and I guess working offline also really helps as well in case someone has like a flaky connection and you want to start, because being able to pre-cache large assets in XR is really important. Yeah. You could, whilst you're playing level one, you can start caching level two in the background. Then when you start playing level two and you've navigated to it, you can start caching the stuff for level three and so on. So there's, yeah, all the PWA features would be super valuable. And I haven't actually looked at how much of those features are supported in the thing, because I don't see any reason, because the Oculus browser is a Chromium browser, mm-hmm. there's no reason why it shouldn't support service workers at least. Yep. You should at least be able to do the caching already.
I think you'll be one of the first people working with PWAs once they launch on the Oculus browser, experimenting with it.
Yeah, like it's my two things. So the other thing I do at Samsung is I write a lot about progressive web apps and things like that. Like my two main focuses are progressive web apps and WebXR. So once you put the two together, I'm just going to be all over that. Everyone should stay tuned to the Samsung Internet Twitter account and we'll tweet out whenever we've built something about it. Yeah, it's kind of cool being at Samsung and doing stuff like that. Like, even though most of my content is based around Samsung Internet and the Samsung Internet web browser, as a team, we're just focused on the web as a whole and making the web as good as it can be. That's actually really where we like differ. Like, we will talk a lot about other browsers if the other browsers are doing cool things. Tide lifts all ships equally kind of thing. So like a great web that works for everyone makes the web great for everyone, like web browsers and content manufacturers and end users.
It's definitely a shared resource that we all benefit from. I completely agree on that.
Yeah, that's one reason why I get angry whenever I see anti-patterns in the web that like make the web less trustworthy. If there's like a trend that makes websites really big and slow, then the end users start having a bad experience with the web and be like, what's the point of me using the web browser when it takes me 20 seconds to load a website? When what I can do instead is download the app, use the app, and then uninstall it. And anything that makes users trust the web less as well. So if the web starts getting full of scams or tricking you into spending money or tricking you into signing away your privacy rights, or like when websites do the thing where it's like, oh yeah, you don't want us to track you, go to this separate web page, untick 30 boxes, each one takes 1 second to click on and is hidden behind a thing, and then return to your page. It's the kind of thing that makes people be like, maybe I shouldn't use the web. And honestly, anything like that just takes value out of the web, because when users stop using the web or get disinclined to use it and it stops being their go-to place for content, the web as a whole loses value for everyone. Because at the end of the day, the web needs users to actually work and make sense.
And I think there's a huge use case for standards in that case, right? Especially for things like permissions, things like, so if a game asks you, oh, they want to use XR on your website or they want to use microphones on your website, and it's all the same interface, people are accustomed to what's going on. People can relate to that.
That's actually a really good point. That's been one of the trickier problems for WebXR, because WebXR is a very privacy sensitive API. You don't necessarily want to be like, oh, this you're supposed to use WebXR, that means they can now scan the inside of my house and get like a full color 3D model. And that's why a lot of the initial APIs for WebXR, such as the hit test API, basically let you test single points and also don't give you camera access. So like raw camera access is actually a more sensitive API than WebXR, which is surprising because WebXR seems really powerful. And at least on mobile devices, you can see through the camera. So we've tried to make WebXR as trustworthy as possible, but developers really do push for having access to more powerful APIs, like the ability to do 3D scanning or the ability to access the camera in order to do computer vision stuff. And that's when WebXR becomes a more dangerous API than just giving the user raw camera access. Because raw camera access is pretty dangerous. You can get a lot of information about a user by looking out of their camera. And so trying to find ways to let developers build stuff in the most user privacy respecting way possible is like a huge priority for us. Like, we don't want people to be like, oh yeah, if I'm using WebXR, I'm signing away all of my privacy forever. So making it clear to users the risks behind each privacy decision they make, each consent dialogue, is really important. For example, enabling VR and hand tracking, that's probably not too bad. It's really interesting that when you enter VR in the Oculus Quest, it tells you specifically it's going to enter VR and use hand tracking. So people could consent, do I want this website knowing where my hands are? But then when you start doing augmented reality headsets and one website wants to do AR and be able to get single points in your room to place a 3D object in a very simple manner, we need to be able to be like, hey, this is relatively safe, but you still probably want to be concerned because they can do X. Whereas another website wants to do some advanced computer vision on your environment in order to, say, have lots of 3D models to interact with your environment. Say you've got a 3D model that wants to find a chair and sit down in it. I know that's a really silly example, but it's the first thing that came to mind for something that would require that level of complexity. So when you have this level of complexity, you need to expose a lot of information about the user's environment. Like, this is more dangerous than having a camera turned on the device, because the user, if they wanted to, at the end of the session, could have a full color 3D model of your apartment, which, if you're a privacy sensitive person, someone could then use that 3D model to then work out where all your valuables are and come rob you, as like a very naive example. Like, more realistically, it would be something like they're doing scans for particular valuables and working out where your location is, so that someone could come in, be like, aha, there is a PlayStation 5 next to an open window on a ground floor, and they are probably in this country, in this area, and then you can like trace up against Google Maps, then you could just walk up to their window and take out their PlayStation 5. This is the kind of thing that in theory would be possible. And it's, as a standards developer, we don't want to invent future crimes. Being able to make it clear to warn users what people can do with what they're giving access to. Because someone might be like, psh, I don't care if someone can see inside my living room. I don't know why that's a problem. But then if you tell them someone could use it to locate all your valuables, that's when they'll be like, what do you mean a valuable location? So it's a tricky thing. And if we do end up doing something like that, like if something we do enables users to have their private information leaked, like someone's using the headset API to lift social security numbers off documents in the room where someone is, then it's the kind of thing that would basically tank the entire web XR. Yeah. Like, people will be like, oh, XR in the web isn't safe. Okay, I'll never use it. And then boom, like all like years of work from hundreds and thousands of people is just gone in an instant.
Also, it's against marginalized groups. I think that could also be a huge issue when dangerous governments could target people via APIs
Oh, certainly,
that,
so. Yeah. If you're at privacy risk, like if you're at risk from your government, you definitely want to be aware of what potentially identifying information sites have access to. So yeah, that's really definitely important.
That's crazy. I never thought of giving access to raw camera data as letting a stranger into my room. That's kind of what it is. Yeah. You should maybe clean up your room before you do that. Make sure that your credit card is not lying around openly, especially looking at like the amount of AI that is able to take insane amounts of information just out of any image. Crazy.
Well, how about something really creepy? For example, if a website has identified that you're of a group they don't want to employ, they won't show you particular job adverts.
Oh, wow.
And that's super illegal. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. It doesn't stop people from doing it. And I'm not talking about little advertising companies either here who do this kind of stuff. Like, I recently found out that people who don't have a gender marker set, so like non-binary people, through certain advertising networks just won't receive any job adverts.
Wow.
But like, you could do stuff like, imagine letting all future employers into your room to know how messy your room is. Like, so if they're doing a 3D scan of your room and they're being like, I see pornography, I see like their room is really messy, so clearly they're untidy. They have no bed frame, but they have every latest games console. Therefore, they probably have, and they just sleep on a mattress on the floor. Therefore, they probably have not the priorities we want people to have for our company. Then they could build up a profile of you based around that. And not just like they search for games consoles online kind of thing, or they like fast cars. It could be we've seen the posters you have on on the walls of your room. We've seen the people you hang out with in person. Like, we've been there on your camera looking at them. Obviously not literally someone spying, but just a machine learning model to pick up various key pieces of information. Or like, we know what brands you buy. Imagine how much of a brand would pay a WebXR company to know if the users have that brand in their home.
Oh, wow.
So say there's like big arcade company with hundreds of users playing XR games on the web. Coca-Cola paying them to be like, hey, we want to know which users have Coke bottles lying around their rooms so we can sell them more Coke product. As an example, like, this is the kind of thing which is just really weird and creepy and could be enabled by us, like, giving low-level access to hardware too easily. And this is the future which we need to avoid, or at least make users aware of what they're opting into when they opt into these very powerful APIs. And communicating this level of risk is really difficult.
Yeah. I think you're the first one on this podcast to go this deep into the privacy issues of web standards in general. And I think it's great.
Yeah, it's just like one of these, like, we keep having these conversations in the group. It's just, we want to enable this. And it's just, as a person who's trying to run spec, I want, as a developer advocate, I want developers to use all the cool latest features in the spec. Hardware manufacturers want them to use all of the information they can provide to build the best experiences. And then every time we try and do it, we end up getting a lot of feedback from amazing security experts being like, hey, this is what this would be enabling. And then we're just like, shucks. So it is something we have to think a lot about in this. And APIs rarely get deprecated in the web or turned off for a while. But if they do, it's almost entirely because of security reasons. Do you remember a few years ago, there was the new shared array buffer API? Yeah,
with Spectre.
And this was launching, it came out around the same time the Spectre attack started happening, and people realized you could use the shared array buffer API to perform Spectre attacks to leak people's information. And then this API basically got put on the back burner for 2 years until these problems could be solved.
Yeah, it was a huge deal for Wonderland Engine because the threading, there was no adoption for it. So it didn't make sense to put a lot of effort into this threading because it wasn't foreseeable when it would come back.
Well, imagine if the same thing happened to WebXR. Like, if it turned out that we release an API and almost all websites are used, which is very dangerous, but it throws a big warning to users. And then almost all WebXR developers start copying like a snippet of code that by default uses this API, then all of a sudden, like, almost all websites are giving very low level access to the users and people are getting their security information stolen. And then all of a sudden, WebXR is now a security liability for the web as a whole. And that's the kind of thing that will get WebXR unimplemented in browsers, or at least these latest features. So yeah, there are a lot more constraints with building for the web. Like, the standard you have to build that is a lot higher. If you mess up, if you have a security risk for one piece of hardware, that's just one piece of hardware that needs to be retired, and then the next generation will have these issues magically fixed. But you do it for the web and you'll ruin the API for an entire generation.
For the one part, though, while building experience, I noticed that the WebXR spec has required and optional features. And I think that's a really awesome way for developers to hedge against possibly features, especially now since they're super early in development, to get turned off in some way. And that's really awesome because you can say, okay, my application supports AR, but it can also optionally make use of hit test if you allowed it or if it's enabled in the browser. And I think for people who want to get get started with WebXR, you built an amazing resource for WebAR, and that is...
Oh, is this immersive web.dev with the tables of the support data?
Oh, that also. But I think you were building like a basketball game with AR.
Oh, yes. This is actually, if you want to get started making a game with augmented reality in the web, I did build a very simple demo with, so it's built using A-Frame. You can fork it and play with it. But I basically built it over the course of 4.5 hours, which I live streamed the whole thing.
Oh, cool. Wow, I didn't actually know that.
People don't want to watch a 4.5 hour replay of me just coding away and building a game. So I wrote a really interesting blog post, well, I think it's really interesting anyway, showing all the steps I went into as I built the various bits of it. And so it's got every time I hit like some kind of roadblock or thing which I forgot about or was unexpected, I made a note of it. And so in this blog post, which the host will link below, You can read through it and it will guide you through the process of building a augmented reality game with some physics, it's augmented reality. I think it even uses a bit of DOM overlay and it lets you see the things you need to think about when building a augmented reality experience that can interact with the environment. And it'll just hit testing as well. So essentially, the way the game works is that you scan your room, you place the basketball hoop on your wall, and then you use your handset to fire the basketballs. And I have actually tested it on a virtual AR headset, not a real AR headset. Mm-hmm. I just emulated it through an AR headset to see how it would behave using an AR controller, and it still seems to make sense there. Yes. And like a lot of the things you need to think about when building it. And it's built with A-Frame. It took me about 4.5 hours to make. I think it's the kind of product that shouldn't take most people more than a week or so to build. Like, I say that because, like, I build VR every day. Like, I kind of went in knowing already how to use the tools that I was using. So it should be a good way to have a go at building something. Maybe remix it, change the basketball to a pumpkin, or like make a throwing hoops on spikes game, or making a coconut shy. So I'm not sure actually... A Coconut Shy is a British game where you have coconuts on poles and you throw baseballs at them to knock the coconuts off the poles. That's a Coconut Shy. And that's the kind of simple game you could build with all of these same things except put together in a different way. But yeah, it's a fun kind of game and I hope people check it out and use it as a way to inspire them to build more augmented reality or virtual reality games with the WebXR device API.
Awesome. I encourage anyone who is interested in getting started with WebXR to go and check that out. Where do people find you online? Like Twitter, blogs?
I'm mostly online on Twitter. Like I'm a lot online on Twitter like all the time. It's a bit of a problem. But yeah, I'm twitter.com/AdaRoseCannon, all one word. Mm-hmm. And if you want to follow what the Samsung Internet team are doing, see when we release new blog posts about WebXR or various other web topics, you can follow Samsung Internet at twitter.com/SamsungInternet. We have a Samsung Internet blog, which is developer.samsung.com/internet, which there'll be a link to as well. Oh yeah, and try out Samsung Internet. It's a really good web browser. If you have an Android phone, we're privacy first. We have loads of like really cool privacy features. We've built in ad blocking, built in tracking blocking. It's a pretty great browser. You don't need a Samsung phone to use it. It works on Android and Samsung. And yeah.
All the links will be in this description. Ada, we would like to thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
Thank you.
Likewise. And thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the White Rabbit WebXR podcast. Please make sure to follow the podcast. It helps us out. And follow us on Twitter @WebXR Podcast.